So tonight, I wanted to talk a little bit about the summer, because that's the season. And it actually, it's kind of like a mixed bag. Because on the one hand, we can see the summer as an opportunity, but it's also a challenge. You know, you listen to the radio now, and it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation because people are talking about how, you know, on the one hand, this is a good year, 2016, it's good. Violence is relatively low compared to what it was last year. But what they're talking about in terms of, like, after July, a couple weeks ago, was the July 4th weekend. I forget the number that they were just...
63.
63?
Yeah.
Like, unbelievable.
It was 58-8 this past weekend.
He said it was a tally, but...
So, so it's like, it's lo yu'uman ki yusupar.
I'm happy to include.
So what they were describing on the news is that there's a big difference between the wintertime and the summertime.
Yes.
So there are... So there are people who are outside.
That's right.
It's hot. There's no school. All these kind of things. So on the one hand, you could say, wow, that's like a crazy situation. There are a lot of differences between summertime and wintertime. I'll give you another example. This one a little bit more like relaxed. We have a relative who at one point was the majority owner of a particular airline. And the airlines, apparently, they are in the business of approximating how much people weigh when they get on the plane.
Oh, sure.
And there's a difference between the wintertime and the summertime. The clothing, but the eating, the exercising, how is that, who's sitting, you're watching. But there is this difference between the summer and the winter. And you ask yourself, you're right, on one level, the question, the whole idea of gun violence and the difficult times of the summer, okay, they're just attributed to certain circumstances. But on the other hand, maybe there's something inherent. And if you think about it from a Jewish standpoint, from a historical Jewish standpoint, the summertime has been a difficult time. Even if you look at the months, the names of the summer months, right? The first month of summer is Tammuz. Now that name is an Assyrian name. It's a name that Ezra and the Jewish community gave when they came from Babel. They gave them Assyrian names. They're not originally Jewish names. The name Tammuz, though, does appear in the Tanakh. If you look on the first page, you find a prophecy from Yechezkel. Now this prophecy is a vision of him going back to the Beis HaMikdash. Remember, Yechezkel HaNavi, the beginning of the book, he is in the Gola, he is in the Nahar Kavor. So this is an image that he sees, the vision of him going back to Yerushalayim. Vayave osi in Perek Ches Pasuk Yedal, Vayave osi el Pesach Shar Beis Hashem Asher al HaTzafona, Vihine Sham HaNashim Yoshvos, there are women sitting there, Mevakos Es HaTamuz. They are, what does Mevakos means? Right, it means crying, but it actually means Livkos would be to cry. Levakos means to do something to someone else, to make the Tammuz cry. What does it mean to make the Tammuz cry? So Rashi here describes that there was an image which was, it was hollow. So imagine like a statue with a hollow inside that they would burn like a furnace. And because the outside was metal, so when it would get hot on the inside, it would perspire, it would schwitz on the outside, and it would look as if the image was crying. So that's what it means, mevakos es hatamuz. They would heat up this image, and it was ki'ilu boche. What does it have to do with Tammuz? Of course, because Tammuz is, what's that? It's hot, it's the sun. So if you look here, the Radak actually quotes a fascinating several descriptions about crying over the Tammuz, that it was the name of a tselem, it was the name of a chaya, an animal that they would worship, that has something to do with the heat. It's also interesting that Tammuz is associated with the beginning of the sign of cancer. When does that start? That starts around June 21st, which is also almost always the date of the summer solstice. but the solstice is the longest day of the year. So the idea that this is like the intensity of summer, so that June 21st, the month of July, it's kind of this intense period of heat of the Tammuz, of Mevakos HaSat Tammuz. It's associated somehow with this Avodah Zarah, this imagery of heat, of the sun, of the summer, and that's clearly a very negative connotation. But it's more than that. Historically, if you look, take a look on the Gemara, on number two, the Mishnah, the end of Maseches Tamis, some of us are familiar with this, the Mishnah describes things that happen on the 17th of Tammuz. So there's a whole sequence of bad things on the top of page two. Nishtabru haluchos, the luchos were broken on the 17th of Tammuz. Batal hatamid, they ceased offering the daily sacrifice. Huvka ahi'ir, the city, meaning Yerushalayim, was broken into. Right? The siege had been laid earlier, but they only breached the city on the 17th of Tammuz. Saraf abas tamas es ha-Torah, v'hamed selam b'heichal. So these are some serious things. So historically, the month of Tammuz is a difficult time. And then you move to the next month, that's the month of Av. So that is notorious for being a difficult Av. That's what we say, Mishenichnas Av, Memat and Besimcha. When Av comes in, we diminish the level of joy. And that means something, according to the Shulchan Aruch, means having to do with building. Let's say a person wants to decorate their house. So there are questions on how to decorate your house, if you should. Or I'll give you a more practical example. Last summer, we spent Shabbos in St. Louis. It happened to be, I think it was like right before, it was Shabbos Chazon, right before Tisha B'Av, or the week before. And that Sunday, I think like this year, Tisha B'Av was in Nidche. So Shabbos was Rosh Chodesh, no, Rosh Chodesh Av is this year is Friday. So that means Sunday was a question whether it's technically Shavua Shechalbo or it's just the 9 days. So it happens to be we were in Sunday, on Sunday in St. Louis, and the Cardinals were playing at home. So like, oh great, we'll go to Busch Stadium. We've never been there before. The boys are very excited. And everybody's, oh, it's the 9 days, maybe even Shavua Shechalbo. So even though we happen to be Cubs fans, so maybe, you know, that you could say, maybe there's a cool Yechilas. But I said, I think it's not right. It's fun to go to the baseball stadium. It's fun to go to Busch Stadium with the kids and have like a nice outing. That's not in the spirit of the 9 days. Maybe if you go to certain other stadiums with, you know, if your team doesn't do very well, maybe it's in the spirit of Av. I guess it depends on, the idea that Av is a difficult time, it fits with Tammuz. And historically, again, what the next line in the Mishnah, B'Tisha B'Av, Nigzal Avosenu Shalei Yikonsu La'aretz, it was decreed we shouldn't enter the land, V'Charav Habayis Barishon V'Shnia, and the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the first and the second, V'Nilkad Beitar, and Beitar, this last great Jewish stronghold of resistance against the Romans, fell, and V'Nechra Shahir, the city was plowed under. So here you have a whole list of calamities, but it's not just a list of calamities. The Gemara elsewhere describes that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi actually wanted to abolish Tisha B'Av. Not in its entirety, but he said, look at a year like this year. Tisha B'Av is on a Shabbos. So Sunday, it's not really Tisha B'Av, it's really Yud B'Av. So we shouldn't have to observe Tisha B'Av this year when it's a Nidche. That's what we call it. And there happens to be that this year there are certain restrictions that are eased because Tisha B'Av is not on the date of the 9th of Av. But the Gemara rejects that and says, no, we don't accept it. Why? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Huchbulu bo hatzaros. Because there's an element of repetition of the difficulty. Meaning, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed once and then a second time. What happens? What do you mean when you talk about something being repeated? It's like with anything. You know, you tell somebody once, I told you twice, that's for added emphasis. My father has a great saying. He says, you can make every mistake in the world. You just can't make the same mistake twice. So what the Gemara is trying to tell you is that Av, it's so serious that Huchbulu bo hatzaros, we made the same mistakes, we got in the same place two times, so there's no playing games even when it's a Nidche. So my question is, what's the meaning of this? Why is it that Tammuz and Av are such difficult periods? Where does it begin? So perhaps it begins the first time, like the Gemara says, turn the page on page 3, the Gemara says, explaining that Mishnah, Petish Abav, on the 9th day of Av, Nigzar Alavusenu Shelo Yikonsu La'aretz. it was decreed against our forefathers, they shouldn't enter the land of Israel. What do you mean? When was that decree? That's right. That's the Chet Meraglim. Exactly. So now the next 10 lines of the Gemara are to pinpoint the date. What exactly led to the Chet Meraglim? When they left, when they came back, they came back from Israel. When did they arrive? So the Gemara says, where I underlined the second underline, Vatisa kol ha'edo v'yitnu eskolim v'yivko am balay lohahu. On that night they cried. Meaning the spies came back, they gave their report, and the Jews cried. It says, oh, we can't, they say, we can't go to Israel. Amar Rabba Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Oh, so ha'ilayla, that night, or meaning the day of that, they cried that night, Erev Tisha B'Av Haya. It was the night of Tisha B'Av. So they cried for the first time on that night, on the night of Tisha B'Av. What do you mean they cried on that night? So I don't know how many of you ever had this. My grandmother has an expression. It's called crocodile tears. Anybody ever have this? Hear this expression growing up? So that expression usually went with another special expression, which was, if you're going to cry for nothing, I'll give you something to cry about. Right? Right? I'll give you something. You've heard that before. So that's actually, most of the expressions of our grandmothers come from the Talmud. It's true. So that expression comes from the next line of the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Amalei Makadosh Baruch Hu." God said to them, "Atem bechisem bechia shel chinam." You cried, a crying for nothing, for free, for absolutely wasted tears, crocodile tears. My mother would say, "Va'ani kovei alachem bechia ledoros." I will give you something to cry about for generations. So, this is the story, but you notice. This is the second time that we have the concept of bechia, of crying, appearing in the context of Tisha B'Av, of the context of Av, and Tammuz in the summertime. Mevakos ha-Tammuz, and now they're crying on the night of Tisha B'Av. So I'm going to share with you something that is super Kabbalistic that I don't understand, but it is amazing. It's fascinating. And it comes from this sefer. It's called B'nai Yisasvar. The B'nai Yisasvar is a tremendous Hasidic work authored by Reb Hirsch Melech of Dinov. Reb Hirsch Melech was kind of an early 19th century related family of Munkach, before the Munkach dynasty, but he was from that family, and he wrote several different works, and one of them is a work that's organized by month. Actually, it's a fascinating book that it's organized by the months of the year. He groups Tammuz and Av together, as we'll see in a second why. And each month he talks about the theme of that month, various different aspects. So he has a Kabbalistic insight to the month of Tammuz and Av on the next page, on page 4, which is amazing. He says, we put in the underline, he quotes in the Arizal, that every month of the year, Asher kol hachadashim him bechinas evari harosh, every month is correlated to a part of a person's head. Vihine, and behold, Beis Chadashim Halalo Heim Bechinas, in the underline, Ayin Yemin, Ubechinas Ayin Small. Tammuz and Av are connected the Einayim, the eyes. Interesting. It's a Kabbalistic idea, connected the eyes. And he quotes, therefore, well, today when we are suffering, we're going to sit, if the Mashiach doesn't come, we're going to have a fast this Sunday. Then we're going to have a fast in another 3 weeks. We're going to sit on the floor. We're going to say, Eini, Eini, Yordamayim. My eye drips tears. Because it's one eye and the other eye. It's for Tammuz and for Av. So what's the significance of the fact that this is all about the eye? Okay? But let's take it one step further. Take a look on the next page. You may say, this is all just a coincidence, but I say, it's not a coincidence. It all must fit together. There has to be some meaning here. What is the major theme that we're going to talk about on Sunday and on Tisha B'Av is the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. Well, guess what? Believe it or not, the Beis HaMikdash is referred to in the Gemara as the eye of the world. It's not a coincidence. Where does this come from? It starts with a story. You know, there was a Roman, he was a servant originally in the Hasmonean household. His name was Herod. So Herod was You know, he was going to be the king until he found out from the rabbis that the rabbis said that Herod wasn't qualified to be the king. So he decided, he picked up his toys and he went home. And the Gemara says in the bottom of the underline here, on the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis and Bava Basra, come, he got up, katlinu l'kula rabbanan. He killed all of the rabbis. He killed all the rabbinic leadership except one man by the name of Bava ben Buta. What did he do to Bava ben Buta? He blinded him. He poked out his eyes. Again, same thing with the eyes now. So then he set a trap for Bava ben Buta. He had Bava ben Buta, you know, set up. One day, he sits next to him and he says, Bava ben Buta can't see who it is. He says, you know that guy Herod, he's such a jerk. What a scoundrel he is. And he's trying to bait him to see if maybe he'll curse him out, he'll speak badly about him. And the Gemara describes that he didn't say a single bad word about the guy who had poked out his eye and killed all the rabbis. So Herod turns around and says, you know what? I have to tell you something. My name is Herod. And if I had realized that you guys were such upstanding citizens, I probably wouldn't have killed you all. Shkoyach. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. So he says to Bava ben Buta, he says, okay, so now what should I do? I feel really bad. So Bava ben Buta says two things, but they're related to each other. He says to him, look in the underline. Hashta, Herod says to him, Mai takanti dahu gavra. How can I fix everything that I did, all the problems that I created? So the Gemara says, Amale, hu kava or shel olam, you extinguish the light of the world, as it says, ki ner mitzvah v'torah or, go build the light of the world, which is the Beis HaMikdash. Ika da amri, the second set of underlines on the left side, hu sima eno shel olam, you blinded the eyes of the world by killing all the rabbis. Dichsiv, as it says, v'haya ime eine ha'eda, the rabbis, the Sanhedrin, they're like the eyes of the community. They have the vision. Yelech v'yisasek be'eino shel olam. Go and get involved in the eino shel olam, in the eye of the world. Dechsev, as it says, hinini mechalel es mikdashi ga'on uschem machmad einechem. The Beis HaMikdash is the eye of the world. So we have the results of that today, right? You go to the Old City, you go to Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. I'm assuming some of us have been on this. You take a tour, and they show you what Herod did for expanding the Beis HaMikdash. The archaeology that's available to see now is unbelievable. But the Gemara describes how he went totally, I guess it was the biggest addition in the history of the Beis HaMikdash. It was a huge renovation project that was precipitated by this whole story. But what do I want to take away from this? The Gemara again refers to the eyes. It's referring to the Beis HaMikdash as the eye of the world. Why is that significant? So what I think is that there is a common thread which is crucial to understanding this, which has to do with summer and has to do with the eye, and it can really change how we perceive life. And that is that the eyes are all about perspective. Eyes are amazing things. Like right now, I'm looking at Bernard. So in my mind, I see you, and everything else is just, I'm not paying attention, just in the subconscious. But I could be looking behind you at the picture, and now all of a sudden you are in my field of vision, but you're not the focus of my attention. You could have multiple people. We could all turn around and look at the Leichter, and we could be looking at the same object and seeing something different because of the way that we're focused on that based on our perspective. It depends on the angle. You're going to see it from that angle, so you'll see the reflection of the electric light on the candle in one direction. I'm going to see it from a different direction. Einayim are all about perspective. And the challenge is, what kind of perspective do you have? See, the summertime brings with it a very, very long day. And that long day has extreme productivity. Think about it. The story of Ruth, for example. What is Boaz doing in the story of Ruth? Where is he hanging out? He's in the Goren. He's in the field, because that's when he's bringing in all of his produce. So the Chag HaKatzir, when we read about Rus, is the kickoff season for the harvest, and the Chag HaAsif, Sukkot time, that's when it's done. So these times, these months, let's say Tammuz and Av, and then a little bit into Elul, these are very long days. Especially, let's say, if you live not so much in Israel, but if you live in Chicago, the days are excruciatingly long, right? The fast is not going to end this Sunday night till who knows when.
9 o'clock
at night. In Israel, it's not that late. In Israel, it's much more modulated. But the days are very long. It's past the summer solstice. It's very, very long days. So there's a lot of productivity. So you can look at these days as what we would call kochi va'otzem yadi. It's the accomplishment that I created. It's my handiwork. You can look at even people. It's interesting, you know, the way that people dress in the summertime is different than the way they dress in the wintertime. You know, Nechama and I once went, when we first moved to Chicago, someone gave us tickets to a Bears game in the winter. Let me tell you, there were no issues of tznius in that stadium at all. And then, on the other hand, I was recently in New York for my mother's 60th birthday, a surprise dinner. So I got there a couple hours early. So I went with my brother. I have a single brother. We went to hang out in Central Park. Before we walked down to the restaurant, we have to have like a secret plan when you're going to meet. So we had like a couple minutes in Central Park, maybe an hour, to just hang out and relax and schmooze. Well, there was a lot of going on in Central Park, and people were not dressed in Central Park, let's just say, the way that they are. So there. And that idea of how you dress and how you present yourself, the whole notion of what you see is about perspective. Is it about what you see, or is it about beneath the surface? Is the person what they seem on the outside, or is the person what they are on the inside? So much of life is exactly this question. The question of summer is, do we say, oh, what we see is the real world and what we accomplished? Or is it a gift from Hashem that we need to appreciate and see godliness within it? That is the question of summer. So if you look, fascinating, this Medrash HaGadol on page 6 is a Medrash HaGadol from Zos HaBracha. Look down on line 19. The last three words in the Torah are Le'enei Kol Yisrael. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do before the eyes of the Jewish people? Dover Acher, line 19, La'ini Kol Yisrael, Ein Ayin Ella Nevua. Ayin, the eye, is an allusion to prophecy. Because a person who prophesies sees beyond the natural field of vision, sees what's underneath. You know, it's amazing. There is a biblical term of Ein Mayim. What is an Ein Mayim? It's a well. But it's ironic, because the Ayin, you would think, is something that you could see. But the well is actually, it's subterranean. So the Ein HaMayim, the eye of the water, means look down. If you look very carefully, you'll see there's water down there. You just have to look deep under. Don't look at the surface. It's the Ein HaMayim. What does water represent? So of course, water represents Torah and spirituality. So you have to dig deep. You have to get beneath, skin deep beneath the surface to find the Ayin, the Einayim. And now we can appreciate where it all started. Because if you go to the next page, go to page 7, we're all familiar with the sin of the spies, the Chet HaMeraglim. So if someone were to ask you, what is the worst thing that happened with the Chet HaMeraglim? I don't know, it's a tough call. What would you say? What's the worst? I mean, there are a lot of bad things that happened there.
Lack of faith in God.
Right, that's probably the worst one. So where did that manifest itself? So, of course, they came back. God said, you can take Israel. And they said, no, we can't. But if you look carefully, where did that get started? Where does that manifest? It's actually in what they describe. Because Moshe Rabbeinu tells them on page 7, on Pasuk Yud Ches, on the line 5 from the bottom, he tells them, Ure'isem es ha'aretz mahi. You should look at the land. So what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them is, you're not expected to be a spy. You're expected to be someone who is ro'eh. What do you see? So sometimes you see based on your perspective. So they report, they come back, and they say on the next page, they describe what they saw, and then they say, but there were giants in the land, and we saw Yelidei HaNakra Inosham, the children of the giants. Kalev says, we can do this. And then, on Lamed Aleph, HaNashim Asher Alu Imo Amru, Lo Nuchal La'alos Ala'am Ki Chazuk Mimenu. So, the response was, we can't do it. Why? It's because what we saw. Meaning, we saw giants, right? So what does Rashi say? Why were they giants? And why does Rashi quotes the Medrash that they were burying their dead? Rashi says, because Hashem wanted to distract them. God made it so that they should be busy with other things. They shouldn't see these people. But the question is, what do you see? What's your perspective? You know, do you see the land of Israel as a land of opportunity that God is giving you? Or do you see only the external challenges? I can understand now why it is that the idea of tzitzis appears in the end of the parasha, because the pasuk says about tzitzis, re'isem oso. That's why tzitzis are, it's machlokas rishonim, either it's only worn during the day, or it only applies to clothing that you wear during the day as opposed to pajamas. But tzitzis has to do with seeing. What's the point of seeing? So if you wear tcheles, which some people do, some people don't today, but theoretically you wear tcheles, you wear a blue string. Why do you wear a blue string? Something where it says, well, Tcheles do malayam, it looks like the sea, which looks like the rakia, which looks like the kisei hakavod, etc. But what does that mean? If somebody sees a blue string, do they immediately think, oh, that reminds me of godliness? No, you have to think a little deeper. You have to realize that there's a symbolism here, that there's some meaning, there's a spiritual message that's being passed along. So in a certain sense, many darshanim point out that the mitzvah of tzitzis is, so to speak, a tikkun. It's fixing the error of the Meraglim, who saw things only on an external level. They saw, oh, they saw a big giant. They said, oh, that's not for us. We can't handle this. So now, this brings us back to the whole source. Take a look on the next page to a beautiful mashal. So this is a piece from the Tanya. The Alter Rebbe has, in his work, the Likutei Amarim, has a theme that he repeats over and over. And that is that we perceive, let's say, look outside, the rays of the sun, sunlight. It really looks like, especially when you see it coming through the clouds, filtering through, it looks like something. But he says, imagine, let's say we traveled to the sun, and you looked at the rays that were emanating from the sun. You would realize that the rays of light and warmth that are coming from the sun aren't really independent. They're just the emanation, the energy that's stemming from the sun. So he says, that's really the way that you have to look at our world. We think that what we see around is real. Now, this is a big question, you know, how real is it? But he says, what it really is that it's the energy of God that's expressed in the world. You know, Dr. Lamb, he should live be well, he once had a ha'ara. You know, he wrote a book on Hasidism. He got interested in Hasidism because he did his doctorate on Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Reb Chaim Volozhiner was the Talmud Muvok, the great disciple of the Vilna Gaon, who was, I would say, the anti Chassid of his time. So Dr. Lamb was like, well, I got to find out what they're so upset about. So he wrote a whole book on Chassidism. So he pointed out once, he pointed out that some people can misunderstand Chassidus as pantheism. That means that God is everything, meaning this table is God, so you're going to worship the table. But what Chassidus says, what the Alter Rebbe is saying, is not that God is everything, but everything is an expression of godliness. God is found in everything. If God wasn't giving us the energy to exist right now, so we wouldn't exist. If God wasn't giving the energy for every single aspect of the world, of life, to exist, so then it wouldn't exist. So that's his mashal on the top. He says, when you talk about rays of light of the sun, top line number one, Masha Enkin Shubu Makoro Buguf Hashemesh, when you go back to the source where the sun itself, Ein Nofel Olav Shem Yesh Kal, it's not considered anything. Because if you look at line number three, She'ein Meir Sham Rak Makoro Levado, you realize that it's the sun itself that is providing the light. Shehu guf hashemesh, line number four, that it's the sun, the ball, the actual sun itself that is meir. Ve'efes bilado, and nothing else. So this, I think, is really the challenge and the opportunity of summer. Summer poses the challenge of brightness, of tamuz. Right? The tamuz, you go back to where we started, that worshipping of the light, of that connection to the sun, it reminds us of the challenge. It's the kochi va'otzem yadi, of saying that we built this. What are we saying, Koheles? Ein kol chadash tachas hashemesh. That's the world of human creativity. So the shemesh, the sun, which is beating down in the summertime, that's the symbol of our accomplishments. So we could say, we did it. Kochi ve'otzem yadi. We can look at it only with the einayim of the physical, or you could look at it with the einayim of the spiritual. And when you do that, you accomplish something even greater. I didn't put it in your packet, but there is a teaching of a great Hasidic master. His name was the Oev Yisrael, the Apta Rav. Some of you are familiar with Rabbi A.J. Heschel, Avram Yeshua Heschel. So he's named after the first great Rav Avram Yeshua, Rav Avram Yeshua of Apt, the Apta Rav. He lived in a couple of different cities in Poland. He was a well-known Hasidic master known as the Ohev Yisrael, the lover of Israel. So he writes something in Parshas Pinchas that is amazing. He says, if you tally up the number of holidays that we have during the year, the special days that we have, they will equal 21. He says, what is that correlated to? He says, that's correlated to? Exactly. He says, the shoresh, the source of all positive energy in the world, really is hidden in the 3 weeks, in what we perceive as a period of difficulty, a period of struggle. It's true. But when you're able to really drill down deep, if you're able to go beneath the surface, you can see that there's a wellspring of power there. That's why there's a tradition that the Mashiach is, right, is born on Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av itself, we say it's Kara Alai Moed. Tisha B'Av is a holiday. What kind of a holiday? It's the holiday in potential. Because if you look beneath the surface, you'll see the Ayin. You know, the Beis HaMikdash. Why is that the eye of the world? Because when you come to the Beis HaMikdash, you see just a building. When you see it on the outside, it looks like a building. When the Gemara describes, when they came to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, they were the enemies of the Jewish people were celebrating. They're like, wow, we destroyed this building. And this appears also in the Medrash Eicha. Wow, look what we did. We knocked down the Beis HaMikdash. We burnt it. We destroyed it. No problem. Look at that. It was nothing. And the Gemara says, no, you don't understand. It's a burnt building that you burnt. A destroyed building. What do you mean it was a destroyed building? What's the pshat? Because the Gemara says that the Shekhinah left already. The Gemara says that the Shekhinah had made 10 stops until ultimately it left. The Medrash Eicha describes that Hashem says, if I'm in the building, if I'm in the house, no one can destroy it. So I'm going to have to, whatever this means, kiviyachol, I'm going to have to step back. And then they'll do what they do. So what we're saying is that what the Beis HaMikdash is about, it's not what you see on the outside, it's what's really happening on the inside. So when they burnt the building, they thought they'd accomplished something, but it was not anything. If you looked with spiritual glasses on the inside, you would see something different. The Gemara has a beautiful, amazing imagery. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was dying, the Gemara describes that there were heavenly neshamas who were going to greet him. So who is going to greet him? Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So think about those two historical figures for a second, because they're both very important when you think about the Beis HaMikdash and the 3 weeks and the period of the summer. Chizkiyahu HaMelech had Sancheirev knocking on his door. He had vanquished everything. He had conquered everything. And he says, you guys are fools. I'm about to knock you down. He calls his second in command, Rav Shakeh, starts screaming at the Jews in the vernacular. He says, don't listen to that guy. He's crazy, your king. He's trying to kill you. Just surrender. And Chizkiyahu says, no, I won't surrender. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was exactly the opposite, right? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one who said, give it up. And it was the warmongers, the Brioni, who instigated the famine and then the rebellion, the Gemara says in Gittin. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had to be smuggled out like a corpse to try to make some kind of deal with the Romans. So isn't it strange? How could it be that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who you could call the great capitulator, is going to be greeted in the heavenly welcome committee by Chizkiyahu, the great, you know, the brave hero? So what's the answer?
It's time for everything.
How do you know? It's because you have to use the Einayim, the spiritual Einayim. You have to look not at what's physical on the outside. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was told by the Navi, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm here. It's okay. So the spiritual state of affairs was in order. So he says, okay, even though on the outside it looks bad, but if you use your spiritual Einayim, the Ein Yaakov, which is Nevuah, so then you're okay. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had the exact opposite. He had the opposite because maybe on the outside things looked okay. The Gemara says they had many years of food supplies, but we know that the spiritual state of affairs by that point had deteriorated very, very badly. If you look, you can see a full description of this for those who are interested in Rabbi Binyamin Lau's book, The Sages, Chachamim, when he has a piece on that whole time period about how things had really gone sour. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, look, Chevra, maybe you think it's going to be fine. Maybe you think we have enough weapons, but I don't see the outside. I see the inside. And the inside is spiritually rotten. It's morally bankrupt. So just give it up. So Chizkiyahu and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they were not at odds with each other. They were actually on the same page because they're looking at the inside. They're not looking at the outside. Even though the sun is shining and you think you see, you need the Ein Yaakov, the spirit of prophecy, to see on the inside. And I think that is the opportunity of summer. It's a challenge, but it's the opportunity because the goal of life is not to shy away from the accomplishment. It's not to not be creative. Of course it's to be creative. The whole idea is milwes ha'aretz v'chivshua, build something out of the world. So the great accomplishment is when you're able to build something and still see the hand of God. To still see, to be able to wear the einayim of Pnimius, of the inside of the Beis HaMikdash, where it's not just a regular building. Really, the Beis HaMikdash is about the soul that lives inside that building. Otherwise, it's just sticks and bricks. It's about seeing what's on the inside. And that's the challenge of summer, but I think it's also the opportunity. So these ideas, the concept, the whole idea of the Einayim, these are things that I think are areas to focus on now in Tammuz and also moving into Av. So thank you for listening. Maybe that has to do why we could expand on it more, why the month of Av is called the Av. Isn't it ironic? Av means it's like the biggest, it's the greatest, because that's the greatest opportunity. And that's why there's a whole story about Tu B'Av, because it's the transition where we're starting to fix things up. But we no, have
I
to use...
I thought it would be like Menachem Av, like the father has mercy on his children after the two destroyed by Tei Mikdash.
That's also true. That is also true. But I think it's the idea of how to look beneath the surface. Not just seeing what's on the surface, it's Dafka looking beneath the surface. All right? A little B'nai Yisachar. Everybody's got to have a little B'nai Yisachar once.